Welcome to the next episode of The Break Breakdown. I'm Courtney Romano, and today on this episode, I'm talking with Jackie Otano. Jackie is a shining beam of light. If you're having a bad day, I highly suggest continuing to listen to this episode because Jackie is just a dream. I met Jackie, we talk about it in the podcast, but at a political rally, funny enough, and we stayed connected for whatever reason. And she has been someone who's just really inspired me by her ability to get out there. She just has this ability to just do it. Part of that, I think, for me comes up in the fact of how much she travels and how nimble she seems to be on her feet and the content that she puts out and just her joy while doing it. And what's interesting about it is I think when you meet people who are super joyful and just like, I don't want to say bubbly because I feel like she's more grounded than that, just deeply grateful for their experiences. You sometimes think that means they don't kind of wrestle with the harder things. And in this episode today, we actually touched a bit about grief that Jackie has felt in her life circumstances this past year, grief as a tool for an artist, also grief as a tool for a human being. And this juxtaposition of her amazing sense of joy and gratitude and thoughtfulness in what she's doing and what opportunities she's been able to create for herself, in the same kind of breath of being able to deeply grieve and take care of your mental health and take care of your grief, it was just such a great conversation to remind me that all of that can exist at once. And this year has been a year full of both deep grief and deep joy for me as well. So listening to someone else's journey and hearing her talk about it was just so great. And also, she let me wax poetic about New York City, which is like all I ever want to do is I just want to talk to people about New York City. so she humored me with that. And so let me tell you, Jackie is a creative director. She's a singer, songwriter. She's also a coach, which if you listen to her speak for any amount of time, you can tell that she'd just be the most amazing coach. And she does all of these things, and she has completely carved her own path, completely gone against the grain. I think she said at one point her rule is to just like defy the script at all costs. So she's got this really powerful energy behind all of her joy and depth and creativity and genius. And this was just a really fun conversation. I think she has so much to say about so many things. And we could only kind of dip our toes into it to keep it a normal length conversation, but she'll definitely be back for more. And all of her information, where to find her online and where to see her work as a filmmaker. I guess I should say, as a creative director, you're the filmmaker, but you're also the visionary for the project. So if it's branded content or whatever it is, you're the person saying, all right, this is the piece we're making. And you really have to have a vision, like I said, a sense of the overall 30,000 foot view, and then be able to help direct people into how to make that happen at a more intricate minutia level. So a lot of skills wrapped up in that. And also, if you have never heard of that job before or haven't been familiar with how that works, might be something where you're like, how do you actually get a job like that? That sounds fun. Jackie talks about how she got this current position that she's in, and it's not at all what you would think. It's just not a prescribed, she did not take the prescribed path. And if you've listened to any episodes of The Break Breakdown, you know that's what I'm most interested in. So I think you're really going to like this conversation with Jackie Otano. And enjoy. Okay, so wait, first of all, let's just go back for a second. You and I met one time.
once
at a political march.
Oh my God. But it was the Women's March, but not like the year that it was 2017, because it wasn't. The big one happened 2016, and I remember this because I had so much FOMO because I was like missing it for a dumb job. I couldn't even tell you what the job is right now, but I missed the like huge 2016 Women's March on Washington and New York. It was really huge. 2017, our mutual friend was like, yo, like, you gotta come with us, it's gonna be a great time.
It was Jess was our mutual friend.
Guess again.
Allie.
She's the cutest little like blonde Jewish girl I've known in my whole life.
Dairy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That was a great day because I remember that march. I was at the one in Washington, D.C. And I think it was actually 2017 because it had just turned like inauguration.
Oh, you're right. Okay. So it was January 2017.
Yes.
The original, the OG.
The OG. And then the next one was 2018. And I really distinctly remember that because it was like a week before I got pregnant. And
yeah. And you told us. And I was like, oh man, I was trying to be this girl's friend.
Wait, I wasn't pregnant yet. What did I tell you?
You did. You told us. Cause I was like, oh man. No, I'm just kidding though. Like I'm friends with, you know, I was just a tiny bit younger than that. Like when your friends were having babies, you were like, oh, I'm never going to see them again. But that was different.
Okay. As someone who has a child, it's not totally different. You don't see the person who's the mother or father. There's a lot of stuff going on. But I do also think for my friends who have older kids than mine, it's a finite amount of time. Like they come back, you come back.
They come back.
I must have been predicting that I was pregnant or like I'm going to get pregnant because I wasn't pregnant until like a week. That wasn't that like March? It was like March, right?
It was March. I have a distinct it's not a very clear literal memory, but I remember feeling that you told us something. And I didn't know you. I still don't really
know.
You know, we hung out once, but I was like, oh, all right, she's not going to be available.
And I think that's so cool though. That's so cool that you're like, this girl is unavailable. But for adult relationships, but I think that's so cool. Just like how we remember meeting, what we distill out of our memory, what we take with us. And it's usually much more wise than we understand in the moment. You know what I mean? Like if you were intuiting something or if I was giving something off, but in the moment you're just like, I remember feeling so unsure of myself. Like, was I going to be able to get pregnant? You know, like all of these questions. Oh yeah. Yeah. But then there's also this like wisdom, you know what I'm saying? That like probably came through a little bit. Anyway,
I think you knew that it was going to, I mean, you guys were, that was the plan. So
we had a plan and, you know, I have a wrath. So if things don't go according to plan, I take it up with someone and I guess God would have been it. Okay. Yeah. Let's stop talking about pregnancy. You grew up in New York City, which by the way, as a woman raising a child in New York City and my mom was born in Queens. So my mom grew up in New York City and my child will grow up in New York City, God willing, goddess willing. Tell me about growing up in New York City.
Well, you know, we didn't make it because I was the third kid. And I was born in Manhattan at Lenox Hill Hospital and we lived in Queens.
What part of Queens?
Woodside.
Beautiful. We're in Astoria. Of course.
Yeah. Oh, look at that.
I mean, look. Tell me everything. Did it work out?
You know, there are days. Well, let me just tell you the chronology. Like, I was the third kid, and by the time they got to the third kid, they were like, maybe things are getting a little, like, getting a little weird over here in Queens. Like, maybe we should consider the other side of the river. Mm-hmm. So my parents decided to go to New Jersey. And so a lot of my upbringing is in New Jersey, but with New Yorker parents who were still taking me to the dentist and the doctor and the gynecologist and all of the things on the freaking Upper East Side, which was a schlep. You know,
from New Jersey.
I mean, it's the same as like any, I guess technically it's the same as any other borough, but it felt like it was really far away. And yeah, so our life still happened a lot over in the city. But, I loved Queens, what I can remember of it. And like going back there, I have a very, I feel like it's way more my identity than New Jersey. Not to talk badly about New Jersey, but I think you should try to stay in the city with your little one as long as you can. And if you don't, then go to like Morristown or Brooklyn or no, don't go to Brooklyn. Go to Queens. I forgot the hipsters took over. It used to be a family-oriented place. It's you can't. There's just like wine lounges there now. But you could you could stay in. You said you're in Astoria? Okay, that's where my grandmother grew up since like 1921. So that's a
I
good
mean,
spot.
Astoria is an amazing place, and it wasn't where we met. It wasn't where I meant to be in New York. I always had it in my head as like a young little sprite that I was going to make it to Manhattan, and I was going to have, I don't know what I thought I was going to have. I think I thought I was going to have a Brooklyn kind of loft on 75th and Park, which is not a thing.
It's
Like,
not.
it's not even close to a
It's not
thing.
even a thing in Brooklyn anymore.
No.
The
And
lofts are like in busy parts of town now.
yeah. And I just didn't know. And I moved to Astoria because people were calling it Actoria at the time because there were a bunch of
Actoria?
actors there.
Really? Oh, that's cute. I didn't know that.
I mean, like, probably nerds were doing it, so that's why I did it. And
I
no
love
one
it.
cool. But they were saying, and I was like, okay, I can go there. It's expensive, but it's not as expensive as anywhere else. It feels like it's homey, but not, but it's still very much a part of the city.
Oh,
And then
yeah.
over the years, we lived in Park Slope for like 2 years, and then we're like, we can't afford this. What are we doing? And move back to Queens. It's just, gosh, it's like, it's the home that I didn't realize was home until we moved here the second time. And we've been here for, I mean, a long time. But where, but okay, but enough about me and Queens.
You're
I
like
that's
serenading me right now because I'm like, oh yeah, that's my favorite
Queens.
Queens. That's
Yeah,
my favorite
baby.
Queens. Yeah, it's like the life I was supposed to have, but like not really because like it's still part of me, and I would never regret any of my upbringing because it was so great.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I have a that's Queens. That's like the girl who lived next door. It's like my soulmate.
Yeah. She's
And
singing her siren song to you.
yes, you nailed it. So, yeah.
Okay, so but let's talk about where you are now, 'cause you're moving, are you moving around a lot?
I'm moving around a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
So I lived in North Carolina for a really long time, like 12 years, because I went to a school in a town called Greensboro. It's actually a really cool little city that I would compare to like Madison or Morristown, New Jersey. Like,
Oh,
it's
cute.
not urban at all, but it has like cute little downtown area and things to do. And they've got their first Friday art gallery walk and all that kind of stuff that Madison
Awesome.
has. Yeah, super cute. And so I enjoyed that for a long time, but I felt pulled to move to Puerto Rico because my mom is Puerto Rican, and I wanted to just connect with the musical roots of the island and also with the language because I didn't learn Spanish growing up. It's like difficult as an adult to feel conversational in that language. So I thought maybe, I could go there and become more proficient in both the music, the music, the culture, and the language. So I moved there November 2019. And right now, just if we're
Yeah.
going to fast forward a
Yeah.
little bit,
Oh.
pandemic, when you don't know a lot of people and you're in isolation because they were taking it super seriously, was not really great. So I am actually just kind of like a lot of people waiting out the COVID thing until I can, figure out what my next steps are. And I'm in North Carolina now again. And
You're in
I
North Carolina.
Yeah, and I've been back and forth between New Jersey, North Carolina, but things get more complicated with our parents and the age that they are, and we can't just like show up at their house. They don't know where we've been.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And you're, yeah. And I imagine too, like, I mean, just as you're saying that, I can imagine so many people who would listen to this podcast and be like, yeah, I'm not living in Puerto Rico in total isolation or North Carolina, wherever, but I have that sense of what am I going to do? Am I writing this thing out? Like, what am I going to do next? What am I going to create? And I guess I should have touched on this at the beginning, but I'll put it in the title so when people are looking at the podcast, they know who I'm talking to.
Sure.
But you are a creative director, a musician, a coach. You have all of these different ways that you express and give back and create things. So what is that like for you to be in isolation and kind of waiting things out? What is that for you like creatively?
The isolation thing, God, I'm not in anymore, but that was my situation for 10 weeks starting March 13th, and it was extremely dangerous for my well-being. I developed like serious, I mean, I don't want to say mental illness, but like I developed PTSD because I was alone and I'm an extrovert, and there were earthquakes that were happening all the time, and I couldn't express myself musically. I couldn't see people. I could, and also there was this grieving of my dream that I finally took this risk to go do something, and there was no way I could, interact with that dream. There was no freedom to complete the work that I had begun. So there was a lot of sadness and also a feeling of failure, even though I know COVID's not my fault, but it still felt like I could have made different decisions or done something differently. And so I had to remove myself from that situation because I was in a fog, so I didn't really have the clarity that I have now of how damaging that was to my heart and my mind and my soul. But it was not good, and I hope that anybody who is an expressive, artistic person has figured out a way at this point to drop the pride and just go for what they need. Whether it means living with your parents or living with some friends so you could have that interaction. We all have to wait this out, and we cannot make our art the superlative right now because it's not available. So.
Yeah, and also I mean, I resonate with that deeply what you're saying because I'm also, I think, an extrovert in that not like I don't get shy and everything, but I get energy from being with people. I get energy from being out even if I'm not with people. This is part of why I live in New York City, 'cause even when you're not with people, you're with people. And that even that piece has been really hard, not being able to bump into people.
Oh my God, it's so weird that you said that. 'Cause I've missed that about New York. Like even like things that some people think are gross, like if you're holding the subway rail and somebody else's hand accidentally falls on yours and it's just kind of resting there. I remember that feeling of being like, ah. Just
You're nicer than me because I'm like, get your hand off me.
touch me. No, but I'm like, oh, I don't know your story. I don't know how we're connecting. There's like kinetic energy. Who knows what's happening? And like, I miss that. And I'm just like,
Yeah.
you can't do
And
that now.
you can't. And I get like if someone bumps into me, if I'm at the grocery store, I'm
Oh,
like,
no.
it's a whole different level of New York anxiety. Before I'm just like, get off me. I'm walking here. And then
Get out of
now
here.
I'm
I'm
like,
walking. Hey, I'm breathing in this area.
And then now it's just, it feels different. It's just like, are you trying to kill me? Are
Are you
you,
trying
do
to
you
murder
know?
me, you son of a
Yeah.
bitch?
Yeah.
You
Like,
just that's what that was attempted murder.
I look, okay, so this is kind of off track. On Christmas Eve, my husband and child and I are out because we're going to do this Christmas lights drive around New York. But Craig, my husband and I, we're really desperately trying to find Bloody Mary mix for Christmas Day because it's just the three of us in our apartment and we're like, we've got to be drinking. So he's pulled over
like at this like busy street in Astoria called Broadway. And I like jump out, go to the crosswalk to go see if this store, whatever, has anything. They don't. I come back. I won't get into the details, but let's just say I had the right of way. And as I'm walking across the street on Christmas Eve and it's like raining out, like icy rain, this car comes around the corner, almost hits me. I scream at the top of my lungs, running back like, what the f- are you doing? I'm walking here. Yes, like I freak out. There's some guy loading something into his car and he's like, yeah, he did not see you. And I had this instinct, this visceral instinct as I'm, as my hands are in the air and I'm like making myself as like, as like, it's as if a like bear a, is like attacking. A bear.
Yeah.
Like, oh. I'm like doing the bear thing at this white SUV and the guy is driving and I have this visceral feeling to be like, I have a child. I have to be there for her life. Like it goes so far beyond.
You were the bear. You were the mama bear.
Yeah. I was literally, I was like, you cannot hurt me. And it's not because of me. It's because what would she do? And I get back in the car and I burst into tears and start crying and shaking. And Craig's like, I should have gone after him. And I'm like, no, anyway, my point being, I haven't seen a lot of people for a long time.
I know. And then I'm sure that happened. And like your instinct was like, straight up 180% New Yorker. I'm a person.
And you're in an SUV that has no business being anywhere in this country, let alone New York City. Where do you park that shit? What are you doing?
They probably have a driveway in Westchester or New Jersey.
Probably. Then get out of Queens. Anyway, yeah. So I miss New York, but it also, as artists, I feel like those interactions are so important to how we do our storytelling. Mm. You know, it's like we lean in, like that hand on the subway or the bad man in the white SUV almost running me over. These are like moments pulled out of real life that become that like kind of weave into our subconscious, right? Uh-huh. So there's this like, I feel, and I wonder what your thoughts are on it, this crazy simultaneous emptiness and fullness as an artist right now. Empty because the things that fill us up are, as you said, not available. And fullness because it doesn't mean we stop trying to make meaning. Hmm. Right?
I see what you're saying because it's like, you know, I have felt in a lot of ways, like, you know, for lack of better words, I felt a little bit like a victim in the pandemic because I require so much extroverted and actually physical touch energy. Mm-hmm. And without that, I feel very victimized, I guess, or just like very vulnerable.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, like the time gives us an imagination and the problem gives us an imagination because we, you know, what people don't realize a lot of times is that creative people are problem solvers, like in a very almost mathematical way. Like when something is wrong, we use our imagination to solve the problem. And maybe it comes out in less of a mathematical way, like in music or writing or a movie or whatever. But we're still trying to solve a problem and share our story or someone else's story. And because we are in the depth of so many problems right now, I could see how that would make a lot of artists more expressive and more ignited to see the difference of the world and try to make sense of the difference of the world.
Yeah. And I don't even think people, like, personally, people operate differently when they're creating things. But personally, when I'm close to grief or tragedy or trauma or anything like that, a lot of times for me, it's about documenting. It's not about understanding it. It's not about like I had a difficult birth, and after the or labor, I should say. I don't remember my birth. It was probably fine.
I was like, how do you, that's a really perceptive.
I did a regression meditation once, and my labor with my child was very, very difficult and very traumatic in a bunch of ways. And so I started writing poetry about it, literally to remember specific experiences I was having and not really to make any meaning out of it. It eventually, as I looked back at it, as I look back at it now, 2 years removed from it, I can see meaning coming from it, but it wasn't even like the point. Like when I was really close in on it, I felt like all I could do is like document it. And I was like, this is literally because I'm going crazy. I'm isolated. I mean, it wasn't the pandemic, right? But as a new mother, you're often very isolated.
Yeah, you're cut off because you're stuck there. You have to.
Yeah. I mean, you're the lifeline, and whether you're breastfeeding or not, and I happen to be. So anyway, I guess I'm wondering too, like, I don't even know if this is going to be the period where creatives are like, here's my fullest expression, or if it's going to be like, we're, like you said, this kind of scientific thing, like I'm documenting this now. And these are all the little ingredients that I'm putting aside for later. Mm. And when I can move through this and move out of this, I have something to work with. But I don't know, what is your take on that tension? Because I do feel like I'm gathering like my little acorns for later. Mm-hmm. But then I also feel like I want to do it now.
I know. Well, that's what we do as artists, though. We forget to enjoy the process, and we mm-hmm. get really excited about the product because mm-hmm. we have packaged the product so many times before, and it's like birthing something. You're like, oh, cool, look, there it is. But like, you forget when you're making something creative that's a work of art to enjoy actually doing it. So I feel like I'm also gathering acorns. Like 2020 was a super bad year. You know, I went through a breakup. My grandma, who was my best friend, she passed away. I had job loss, and then there's pandemic. There's just a lot of crap going on. And I experienced grief in a way that transformed my actual being. Mm. And although it was painful, I feel now like it's a superpower. So then after I got over, I'm not over it, but once I became, I'll probably in a little way live with me my whole life, and that's okay. Yeah. I've accepted that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But now that I'm functional and getting healthy, my body's healthy, my mind is healthy, and I'm doing everything that I need to do for the last few months to be okay, I feel like I'm gathering acorns, but I'm also finding acorns that I buried and I didn't know that I buried, and they're in there. And I'm like, ooh.
Yes.
Look at that. And it happens when I force myself to sit down and like think like about the things that I didn't feel strong enough to think about, even like a week ago or a month ago. Like, you know, what do you miss about Nana? You know, mm-hmm. I'll sit down and I'll be like, what do you miss about Nana? And some crap will come out and I'll be like, ooh, look at that little buried acorn I didn't know was there. And I can actually connect it to a memory like that I didn't feel ready to process at the moment, but somehow it was buried deep in. So yeah, I completely relate to what you're saying, that it's a hard time for us, but it's also a very fertile time for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I think like grief is such an interesting is not the word I mean. What do I mean?
It is interesting. I think it's totally interesting.
It's interesting, mm-hmm. but it's like this year in particular, it's defining or like,
yeah.
It's just, I feel that, you know, even people who haven't lost someone this year, there has been so much loss. I was thinking just in the past couple of days about New York in the spring, how the rest of the country wasn't really experiencing it yet. And then we were just like, you guys, this is going to happen. This is very serious. We've lost people, you know, we've lost people that we care about, and people that we care about have lost people. And this is hard. This is really hard. And it's coming. And it, and I remember it feeling so specific to New York City for a hot second, like in March and April, when things were really tough and sirens were going all the time. And so even though, you know, knock on wood, our family is, some people have gotten sick, but been gotten through it and whatever, there's still a large sense of grief that we are trying to feel collectively, and we can't quite feel it yet because we're still in the middle of it, you know, and we haven't really had many moments to feel it. There were some moments around the inauguration that allowed us to feel some grief.
Yeah, totally.
But we need, I think we need more of that. And yeah, I don't know. Like, I, what is your feeling on that? Is there a collective thing that you think would be helpful in understanding grief, particularly from this year? Or
it's hard to say because I am a newbie to grief. I mean, I've lost people. I've had, you know, people in my life pass away. I actually lost both my grandmothers in 2020, but, you know, there was a different significance to the one in September because it happened like a week after I was dumped. And so, not to put it so, whatever, it's reality. That's what happened. So, yeah. You know, it was, and we had an exceptional relationship. So it was like grief on top of grief on top of grief. So I've been thinking that my grief is specific to me, but I'm wrong about that, especially as I talk to more people, you know, like you're telling me your story. And I think I know that you are completely right. There is a collective grief that has been happening for a long time, and it's still happening. We are grieving the lives that we had. We are grieving the company of our friends and our loved ones. We are grieving opportunity. Mm-hmm. We're grieving travel. We're grieving experience. All those things are so essential, no matter who you are, introvert, extrovert, creative person, scientist. We all need those things, and they're not allowed. And it's a very confusing thing for us to be told no. Mm-hmm. Like, you're an adult, and you've worked to have your life, and you have a career, and you've done everything that you're supposed to do, but no, you're not allowed to do what you want to do, right? Or to express yourself the way you want to express yourself. So I think everybody's grieving, like, yes, absolutely. And yeah, it's been going on forever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like we're just realizing how, or okay, I am just realizing.
Maybe me too, obviously, from this conversation. Good.
How grief is interwoven into the human experience at every turn. And we think, I mean, that's the thing that I've gotten from this whole pandemic, this whole year, is that nothing is stable, nothing is absolute, everything's in flux. And the things that you depend on materially, you know, even like the hand of a stranger on your own hand on the subway, that material kind of physical thing, those things are not the sustaining things. The sustaining things are, it's still beautiful when the sun comes up every morning and it comes through the, you know, it's funny when my cat flips on her back and does that thing, you know, and those things seem small, but it's actually, those are the things that are dependable. And all these other things are like, it took one little mutation of a virus, of a whatever, to show us how much it's a house of cards, you know? And I'm really interested in what comes out of that. You know, I think we might go back all to the same thing when this is all said and done. We might go right back to like, you know, okay, business as usual. Let's go make money. Let's go, you know, like, let's care about celebrity. Let's capitalism, 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 you know, all that.
Yeah.
There's a guy running around just saying it. In my mind, he's like 2D and like.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I hope there are some people that like have broken free of the hallucination that we've been in. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I guess my point is, I do feel like grief is a phenomenal tool to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I love the way you express that and verbalize that. Because yes, and I think most people are afraid of grief. Mm-hmm. And they try to reject it and they try to stay away from it as much as they can. But we have all experienced it this year. It's like something we all have in common. And it is a tool. It's totally a tool. I have seen myself come out of darkness that I never thought that I would. And it makes me feel more powerful, like the phoenix rising, you know?
Yes.
And in a way, I'm like grateful for pain because it teaches. Mm. And I'm grateful for grief because it shows me the depth of my capacity to love and my capacity to have pain. And why wouldn't I want to get to know myself that way? I would like to know myself. Like, how deep is my pain? How deep is my love? How deep is my nostalgia and my capacity for memory? And you know, because like when you're grieving, you think of the past, and it's hurtful sometimes, but it's special, and it's useful. And like you said, it's a tool. It is a tool. And it's beautiful, even when it's painful.
Yeah, I think that's so great. You're reminding me of a Mary Oliver poem, and I'm gonna butcher it, but it's basically like, a lover once gave me a box of darkness, and even that was a gift, or something.
Yeah, I know. Do you exactly know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm gonna find like the right. I'll find a link to the actual words and put it in the show notes, because I do think it's really quite beautiful and one of those like five word poems that I've thought about for years and like only understood as I've gotten older and lost more and had more times of darkness. But yeah, grief. You're a creative director.
Yes.
I feel like a lot of people might be curious as to what that means. So how do you describe it?
In my life, it means that I am a person who, well, let me just tell you a little bit about my history. I went to school for film and I was a video producer for 10 years. And basically that means that I was shooting and editing like promotional content for anybody. Like it could be a small business, nonprofit organization. I even did something for LaGuardia High School. totally random. But like, you know, I just would make videos for people. But over the years, it became clear that my strength was not necessarily shooting. Not that I'm a bad shooter, but I just would have these ideas that were like really, really good ideas. And it would really inspire the direction of the shoot. And eventually it just became that I had a certain brand for my videos and they had a certain voice and a certain feeling. And I was approached by, well, usually when I'm approached by clients, it's because they're looking for that feeling, that like storytelling, fun feeling. And then I was approached by an ad agency who was like, we want you to be the creative director. We know you're a video producer, but like, obviously your genius, or not genius, your ideas, whatever. I don't need to be humble. My genius, okay, is in my motherfucking ideas. And I got some good ass ideas.
Of course.
Yes. And so they're like, we want you to like come over here, like build up our whole creative department and blah, blah, blah. So that's what I do now. I'm a creative director for an ad agency. And I basically come up with the ideas. I also shoot and I edit. But then we have like growth specialists that take the ad content and they blow it up and they get clicks and traffic and all that analytics stuff that I don't freaking understand. But yeah, so for other people though, creative director, it's a very different track. Like they climb the ladder and they do other things and maybe they have a master's in marketing. That's not how it went for me, but I definitely came from a content creation background and found that my niche was my imagination And somebody saw that potential in me, gave me a platform, and I was able to express that. So that's where I am now.
I think that's so exciting to hear because, you know, I don't know if I was getting, I don't know where I was on my whole film journey when we met in 2018 or whenever that was. It honestly feels like 17 years ago.
I know, right? I don't even.
So it doesn't matter. Like the year doesn't matter. Yeah. But I was told like for film, you need to be a production assistant and then you'll maybe be second AD and then maybe first AD. And then,
exactly,
you know, like here's the track to becoming a film director. Mm-hmm. And I feel maybe like we're kindred spirits in that I'm like, that doesn't interest me though.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. And I'm not interested in the, I don't know, like the label of anything. I'm interested in the doing of the thing.
Yes.
And it sounds like what's cool about your story is that, and please correct me where I'm wrong, but is that you were like, let me do the thing that I want to do. And then as you were in the middle of doing it, someone was like, hey, I see you, as opposed to I'm going to take this step, then that step, then this step, then that step. Is that basically your experience?
Absolutely. Yes. And that's always been the way I approach everything. I'm defiant against the script always. Like I'm that way with expectations of society and, you know, like I have certain family members that are like, you go to college, you get your master's, you find a wife, you get married, you buy the house in the suburbs. And I've always been like, yo, we don't know, we all have to do that. Yeah. But, you know, some people do and that's great and they love it and it's, I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
But that's beautiful. But the same goes for like the work industry. Like there's been the same amount of pressure and I think it's like a New Jersey, New York thing because of like, you know, it's so competitive. And, I remember like my friends that went to SVA or like NYU for film school, their approach to getting jobs was so different from mine. Like I was kind of like in the dirt, like trying to figure out how to make stuff work for myself. Like
they were trying
to climb the ladder and I was trying to build my own ladder. And it was really hard and I looked stupid sometimes. And for 10 years I was super stressed out, but I always knew deep in my heart that there was going to be some kind of opportunity or several opportunities, really. I've had great opportunities over the years where someone was going to say, hey, what you do is like super aligned with how I feel as a human. So I want you to tell my story because like I like the way that you are. I like the way that you express yourself. So
yeah.
To me, that means a lot more than going to work for NBC and becoming an intern and a page and, you know, whatever. I don't even know the hierarchy, but I had no interest in that. And I knew I wasn't going to do well with that. So.
Well, right. And that's the thing too, is knowing how you're going to thrive. You know, there's no way there's one prescriptive way to do things.
Absolutely.
When there are 7 billion people.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way. The laws do not abide that. You know,
it's totally. Like by the law of survival, it doesn't make sense for everybody to follow the same formula.
Yes. Absolutely. And I also understand why people do, because I did it for a long time pursuing acting. I was very much pursuing the formula of how to get to Broadway, except for the fact that I couldn't ever hold myself to those rules. I would do them and then I'd be like, oh, but I don't think it's worth it to pay this casting director to give me notes just so next time maybe I get a callback. I don't like that casting director. I don't think they're nice. I don't think they're going to give me, I don't want to pay to play, essentially, is like what they would do. And that's just like, for a lot of people, they were like, yeah, that's just what you do. And I was very much of that mindset, except when I would get to these dead ends and be like, I can't do this. Like, I literally cannot do this. So it's interesting to hear it from a different perspective too. And, you know, I feel like it's also really refreshing to be like, yeah, I was who I am and someone saw it. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of this. I was watching something with David Mamet, and he was talking about how the smart person in life, it's from Stoicism, and he was quoting it. The smart person in life doesn't go after anything that she can't give herself. So you pursue honor, you mm-hmm. pursue integrity, you pursue self-respect, mm-hmm. and the Broadway gig or the directing gig or the creative director gig, whatever it is, like, those are things that people have to give to you. So don't pursue those.
I see. Wow. That's cool.
Which sounds like what you did. I mean, I don't know if you would put it that way, but it sounds like you were like, I'm going to keep making these twists and turns based on what drives me.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I, you know, there were a couple times when I was presented with work that I didn't feel aligned with my values, and I was super uncomfortable doing it, and I couldn't complete that work. So along the track, when I was, you know, pretty young, like maybe 23, 24, I just decided, like, I'm going to do my own stuff. I don't care if I'm poor. I mean, I was poor for many years. And, I got so much out of all the projects that I did, and I didn't say no to things that I knew were going to fill my soul, even if the client couldn't pay, mm-hmm. Because there were other riches that came from that. And of course, we all have to pay our bills. We have to pay mm-hmm. our rent, blah, blah. But there's a way to, you know, try to get the things you need and also get the things that you want. And at the base of it, it's always just like, do what is like you know, mm-hmm. do stuff that makes you happy. And that's all that I try to do. And I was very stubborn about it. I never, you know, like, wanted to do stuff that I didn't want to do because I'm a brat. But it worked out because, you know, everything that I did was passionate. I never did anything. I never walked into a shoot with, you know, grunts and moans. I was like, this is so fucking cool. I can't believe I'm working with so-and-so. Oh my God. I can't believe I'm here. Oh my God. I met that guy. You know, I always had that spirit.
Yeah.
Everything that I worked on. And I never was resentful. So,
yeah.
It just made way for other opportunities because I was a happy, you know, happy creator.
Yeah. Which I, you know, as you're saying that, it's making me think about the struggling artist stereotype that's just like pained and upset and struggling. And this is because they're a real artist. Like, I mean, right. It's like, what is that? Why are we always equating art with pain and like art with, again, I blame capitalism, but I think they're trying to screw with us. But you know what I mean? Like,
what's
your experience of that?
God, it's so weird that you're, I'm going to take out my notes real quick because I had written something about this. It's so weird. We totally are kindred spirits because I wrote something about this. Okay. Yeah. So I do think that there is like this idea that we have a lot of pain and that we're too sensitive and we feel things too deeply and we are like too dramatic and we're too loving. And like what bothers me about that is that people like are enchanted by it at first and they're like, oh my God, you're an artist. And they get all excited. Like you have this like superpower, but it's just the way that we are. And it is not a weakness. And yeah, because of society, financially, we struggle sometimes. Is that our fault? No. The expression that we have is rich as hell. And if it is not supported financially by, I don't know, like society or whatever, then I don't really think that's on us. And it shouldn't make us want to be less emotional, less expressive, less musical, less passionate, less loud. Because yeah. I'm always being told I'm way too fucking loud and I'm sick of it. You know, you're too this, you're too that, you're too whatever, whatever. It's not a weakness. It is a strength. It doesn't mean we're better than anybody. It just means we're different. Everybody has their different strengths. One of our strengths is that we can empathize really well. We love really deeply. It also means that we feel grief really deeply. Mm-hmm. But that allows us to be teachers because we feel the depths of that shit. And then we can find a way to verbalize that or put it into art or put it in a play or put it in a song. And that's the kind of stuff that speaks to everyone.
Yes. Yes, it's the conversation. It's the human conversation. And someone has to start the conversation. And sometimes that is, you know, through something just super expressive, like a piece of art. Sometimes it's just when two people get together and start talking. But there is humans, no matter what you do, no matter who you are, where or when you were born, have a desire to tell stories and to have stories told to them, right?
Yeah. It's like it's the oldest art form. I mean, seriously, news and like storytelling, that it goes back to the beginning of our existence.
Yeah. It's like, it's so ingrained. It's so ancestral. It's generational. Mm-hmm.
It's indigenous. It's native. Yes. It's instinctual. It's our truest being.
Yes. And we live in a culture that's like, that's cute.
Do you want a donation?
Oh, that's cute, honey.
He's doing
a little independent thing. That's so adorable. Have I seen you in anything, though?
What have I seen you in? Oh my god. Yeah, or like I used to get like, oh, you're majoring in vocal performance? What are you gonna do with that?
Yeah, the same thing someone's gonna do with an English major. All right.
Yeah, we don't know. Like, no, I don't know yet. I'm 18.
Yeah, I'm 18. I like to sing. Wait, okay, so let's talk about your music a little bit. Because you know, it's so interesting. I really feel like the musicians that I've been talking to lately are like, well, I create art in all forms. And yeah. One of those, and so for you, it's like, I see you as, you know, a creative director, a teacher, coach in some ways, and then also this musician. Mm-hmm. And your voice is so beautiful. And it feels to me when I'm listening to you sing, like it's deeply connected to something just much larger than you, you know? And I say that I hope you take that as a compliment.
Yes, that is so cool. Thank you.
Thank you. That's how I experience your work. And I think it's so interesting when people are these multi-hyphenate beings, because I have been so averse to that. I'm like, Courtney, define yourself for years. Yeah. And I still feel that pull and that tension. But something about musicians lately where I'm like, yes, you all do multiple things and then you live in this musical space and write songs, which I feel like I could never do. And I have so much respect for. And I'm wondering how music fits into your life and your work and everything that you're doing. How do you think about making it? What is it for you? Just tell me about being a musician.
Well, it is... I will always say that it is the most like fiber optic part of my being. It is the thing that generates me. It is the thing that makes me who I am. And, you know, if somebody tomorrow told me, hey, we're going to burn all the cameras in the world and you could never shoot anything again, but you can sing in a choir, I'd be like, okay, that's cool, man. You know, like, so, and that's not to belittle my career at all. I mean, I love expressing myself through video and that is another form of storytelling. But when I sing, I feel that I am creating the sound of my soul and sharing it with people. And then when I write songs, I feel like I am expressing my heart, which I didn't learn until recently is relatable. and it's good for people to relate. So in that way, I have found that songwriting is useful on a grand scale. I always thought it was kind of selfish. So it's just something that for me happens innately and without, you know, I'm not like a prolific writer. I don't write like an album a year. I actually, it takes me like 3 years to write an album and record it. I've been working on this last project for forever, but that's just the kind of musician that I am. And it, in that way, it's an artifact of the last 3 years of my life. It's a document of the last 3 years of my life. And I really appreciate being able to create something that's a stamp on this particular person's life in this history of time. Mm-hmm. And I can't stop myself from doing it. And whatever it means to anybody else is not really of my consequence or my intention, but I do hope that it's useful to somebody. And
what something that you said really struck me because it resonated and I'm not sure why. So you said that you felt like you didn't know it was going to be relatable. You thought it was selfish.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, I don't know. Something about making something from your own thoughts feels like you're putting yourself up on a podium and saying to the world, listen to what I have to say. And that feels selfish because it, and especially as a songwriter, if you're in control of how everything sounds and you're in control of like all of the words, all of the melodies, all the instruments, it feels like you're not creating a conversation. And so the thing that makes it feel selfish about it is that I don't get to know how someone feels when they listen to it on a Friday night when they're alone listening to music. I don't know what memories it brings up for them. And in that way, it's very hard for it to be a conversation. The only way that it can be a conversation is if we play live and we have a conversation with another instrumentalist. Mm-hmm. Or if somebody who appreciated the song has a very good way of explaining what it meant to them. And it's not just compliments. It's like, this is the function that it served. And this happened in my life. And this is how I related. And I don't always get that kind of feedback. So I don't always know if mm-hmm. it's, you know, relatable. It feels like it's just coming from me and I'm standing on a soapbox and I never want to be the only one who's talking.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because as someone who doesn't make music but listens to music, I think every song is about me.
Of course it is. Right? Yes.
Right? No, but I mean like, or it's like when you're reading a book and you feel like you're having a conversation with the author, you know, it's like,
I like that.
I do think that we as human beings will, when given the opportunity, we'll see ourselves in anything, right? Because like you were saying earlier, we are trying to know ourselves, right? Yeah. But as an artist, I also relate to what you're saying because it there is a little bit of a feeling of like, am I allowed to just say what I want to say and make uh-huh. what I want to make? And no one's stopping me. Does anyone want to stop me? And yeah. right? And really what that is, I think, is like walking through the doorway of vulnerability and being like, you know, I don't know if it's a soapbox, but like wherever you're standing, you're absolutely naked, you know, yeah. all angles right out there.
Just everything's just flowing right out.
Just literally, it's like everyone has a mirror so they can see whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, it's completely disarming. And like a free fall mm-hmm. when you release something made from you, because you don't know that if people are sitting there being like, she wrote this song because she knows me, she knows my inner depths. But I think that every time I hear a song that I love, I'm like, there they go again, writing about Courtney. Oh man.
That helps me so much though, to think about it like that. Like, you know, and And I almost feel bad that you have to like console me in my creation, but like, no, I really do want to know that like it's not just about me. And to hear you say that is huge. It really helps me a lot.
Well, I think something that has, I'm glad that's useful. I think I've gotten it from people that I've studied who, you know, there's this thing where sometimes artists are like, I'm here to tell you what to think.
Yes.
And I've never resonated with that. It was something that I felt very much at odds with when I was acting, because I felt sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes I found myself in communities that were like, we're actors, so we get it. And I'm like, I feel as dumb as everyone else. I don't get it. I don't get anything. What are we doing here? Right? And I think the thing that has helped me in the past is people that I've, you know, writers that I've read their kind of philosophies and thoughts on life and all of this say, you know, we are, not to quote Mamet again, but he says something like, you're creating a piece of work, drama, play, or whatever, to lift the burden of the audience's consciousness for a moment.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, he's pretty crazy. So like, it's not even about what you're saying. It's like, let's all suspend together in flow for a second, and then we'll go back. And that's it. And it doesn't have to be more than that. It doesn't have to be a lesson. It doesn't have to be a salvation. We're no one's savior. We're not smarter than the audience. The audience is usually smarter than us.
Yeah.
You know, which you know from working in film and all of that. It's like, you know, if they can beat you to the punchline, it's not a very good punchline. You know?
Yeah. Oh man, that is so monumental what you just said. That's amazing. I love that.
It was a quote.
No, but how you followed up with we're not saving anybody, we're not, and we shouldn't ourselves take on this burden that we're some kind of savior. We're just we're doing our not job, but we're expressing our life the way that we express ourselves, and somebody else might express it by like building a bench or starting a church or I don't know, but like this is just ours, and it doesn't mean that we're like better than anybody or smarter than anybody. I think it does get a little confusing because like while our society like belittles the arts a lot, we also put it up on a pedestal, like all this freaking like American Idol crap. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very confusing disparity of like, okay, do we love people who are amazing musicians, or do we like not want to go pay to see their show? You know, like
right.
I don't understand.
And it's like, right. It would be one thing if American Idol and The Voice and all of this stuff was getting funding, if arts education in high schools and middle schools and elementary schools and pre-K was getting funding, but it's not. So you're right. There is, it's not necessarily about the art. It's not, you know, it's like baseball players. Like I happen to think, I don't know what your take on baseball is, and this is not a baseball podcast, so I can only go so far with this.
I love baseball though. I like baseball a lot.
You like baseball. Okay. So my husband,
I like the Mets.
Hey, look, my husband is from Boston. So we vote for the Red Sox. However, that doesn't mean I can't
need to just end the call right now and delete everything. This is all a waste.
Forget it.
We have nothing in common. Just end it.
But you like the Mets, so you don't like the Yankees.
Correct. So we're friends.
So we're friends because we hate the Yankees.
Okay, I hate the Yankees too.
Yeah, we hate the Yankees. We're on the same team.
Oh yeah.
Yankees. Yeah. I'll lose like 10 of my
They're gonna
11
unfollow
followers.
Yeah, it's okay. We're gonna keep the ones who are really loyal.
Exactly. But anyway, love baseball. Baseball as itself is a very elegant game because there's all this drama. And if you know the backstory and you know what the pitch is and you look in the pitcher's face and you look at him say no and say yes, and then they're at that and it's 15 foul balls. And finally, you know, it's like there's so much drama. There's so much
suspense. Slow. Yeah. It's like a British comedy. It's like slow suspense.
It's so slow. We don't. but American culture isn't talking. Well, okay, I don't want to paint with a broad brush here because I really don't know that much about how baseball is taken in this society, but I do just want to make the comparison to sports celebrities where, like, for instance, now it's all about hitting a home run when there are some other elegant maneuvers that are just as cool as a home run or a grand slam, even though those are the big shiny things. Everyone wants that, right? Uh-huh. And it's the same, I think, in art. It's like we get into this celebrity level where it's now about like the cult of personality, but we don't even care about the underlying foundation of what the person is doing.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yes.
How do you fix that, Jackie? Come on.
Oh my God. I don't know. It's like, it's been going on forever. You know, like even if you think back to like musical theater in the 19, when it was roaring in like the 30s and stuff, it was just like a bootlegged thing that we stole from Harlem. It wasn't even like,
yeah,
I'm getting into something way deeper, but I just mean like, you know, there's always been a confusing evaluation of the arts and stealing and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
And I don't know how to fix all of that history.
Yeah. Well,
I just want people to pay us.
Yes. Well, yeah, if we're going to live in a capitalist society and you want the benefits of art, then, you know.
Yeah.
Rank us higher.
Pass a little higher. And, you know, like, you know, the people in The Voice are probably not the best singers that you're ever going to hear. So there's probably a few people that are better singers than that. I can think of at least five that I know personally.
Yeah, so. I know. It's really, and this is what I'm finding really interesting in talking to people on this podcast, because, you know, this is called The Break Breakdown, which is really about how do you break into an industry to break it down from the inside out? How do you get your big break when you, can you just give it to yourself? You know, can you just take it?
I think it takes time though.
Yeah. How do you think it happens?
I think people have to be patient. And if they genuinely go through their art or their craft, giving a shit and like wanting to create something that is useful or create something that's beautiful, create something that makes them feel good, I don't really think you can go wrong. Because in the end, like, and you can't know the doors that are going to get opened down the line. I think so many of us obsess, like, how am I going to get my break? Like, how am I going to get on Broadway? Like, you know, you shouldn't even be thinking about that. You should be thinking about, like, the 80 steps that go before that and enjoying them.
Right.
Enjoy the friends that you make in the audition that you never would have met otherwise, and appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, you know, let the passion fuel you. And I know this is really hard. I definitely had some really hard years, but I really did have faith that something was going to happen if I worked hard enough and if I approached my work with integrity and I chose to work with people who deserved it and I gave people breaks who deserved it. Mm-hmm. Even when I needed a break, I was like, your story needs to be told. This is really special. I'd figure it out. And it paid off. I think it really paid off. So
yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. I want to ask you one more question. I didn't even nearly get to everything that I wanted to ask you. So you'll just come back and we'll.
Sure. I'd love to. This is fun.
But you know, I was thinking about the different questions that I wanted to ask you. And there's one question about, you know, the question that everyone asks about what advice would you give your younger self? But I'm actually super interested in what you would say to, you know, what advice would you take now that you think the you in 5 years from now would give? So in 5 years from now, that person walks through your door right now and says, Jackie, I have advice. What is it?
Okay, this is a two-parted answer. The first part is put more into your brokerage account.
Fair. I'm telling that to my 25-year-old self currently.
Yeah. Some other you done fucked up and now you gotta make up for that time. Yeah. I'm 33 and hello. Okay. Anyway, the more beautiful way of saying that, I guess, would be to not take things so seriously. I think Jackie in 5 years would look back now and say, you know, just enjoy the day that you spent in the studio meeting that amazing woman who was a really cool conga player, or that really cool guy who was like killing it on clarinet or whatever. And you might never see them again, but you're enjoying their company. You're not just like obsessed with, oh, is that going to sound good? Oh, was he in tune? Who's going to think of this? Who's going to be impressed? Is it going to get played? Just enjoy being there in the moment and don't take it so freaking seriously. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to get there, but I can feel that it's just the beginning. And I hope that 5 years from now, Jackie will be like proficient in enjoying the moment.
I love that. I hope I am too. See if you can get 5 years from Jackie to come knock on my door tonight and give me that advice. This has been great. You're great.
You're great. It's so nice to hang out with you. I knew I was gonna just like love the shit out of this time.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And look, I had a kid and we're hanging out and it's a pandemic.
We are. Look at that.
Look at that.
I'm gonna standing ovation. That's pretty cool. And thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate that you value my perspective, and it's just been really really useful and beautiful to talk to you and hear what you have to say too. So thank you.
See what I mean? Jackie's just the best. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, there are two ways to help out the Break Breakdown. The first way is to share it with someone. Whether you text it to someone or share it on social, take a screenshot of this episode and let someone know that it might be worth listening to. The second way is to leave us a review on iTunes. Tell us what you're loving about this podcast so far. It helps other people who are interested in these kinds of topics to find us. And what we're really trying to do is build community, build consensus that independent work and the independent path is very much worth taking. So thanks for joining us each and every time. I really want you to know how much I value it. I really appreciate you being here, spending some time with me, and I'll see you next week.